Hi, everybody. Welcome in. It's Dr. Tim Brown. You're listening to Farmcast for the Community, sponsored by the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. We took a little break in December, and that was just so we could have a break from all the things that we do. But we're back, first of the year, and no better time to talk about resolutions. But before I get to our topic today, I want to remind everybody in February, which is actually Cardiovascular or Heart Month, and also Black History Month, we're going to talk about a topic called heart failure by Dr. Devin Lavender. He's going to come on and guest, and we're going to talk about heart failure, the medications used to manage cardiovascular or heart diseases, and how that affects certain populations, including those that are Black. So please join us, listen to us. We're hoping we can keep you healthy out there. And with that said, I have to admit, I made a few resolutions myself coming out of this pandemic and trying to figure out what to do is, how much alcohol is too much alcohol? And should I make a resolution that I'm going to cut back from what I've been doing through this entire pandemic? Am I drinking too much? Am I not? Maybe these are questions you're asking yourself as well, because statistics show we certainly see an uptick in how many people are drinking and how much they're drinking. So to join me today to talk about this is Dr. Randall Tackett. Dr. Tackett is a faculty here at UGA. He and I are colleagues. And I want to say welcome on board, Randy. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about this.
Thank you, Tim. It's glad you asked me. I look forward to hopefully answering a few questions during this time period. So,
perfect. Now, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do at UGA?
Sure. I'm at the College of Pharmacy, and I've been a faculty member here since actually 1981. I think I've been here longer than anyone else. You know you're getting old when you one of your students was the current dean. So, and I do have plenty of students that now come in and introduce themselves as they're the child or even lately grandchildren of somebody that I've taught. So I've been
What a great legacy, though. That's a great legacy.
I've enjoyed it here. So really love it. And makes it much sweeter since we won the national championship.
Too. I know, right? Now, yeah. I know you have a background in pharmacology, but also toxicology, correct?
Correct.
And so in this is right in your wheelhouse, talking a bit about alcohol, how we should use it versus misuse it. And that's a very fine line from what I find for my own personal life, but also from what I read in the literature as well.
You're absolutely correct there. The thing about it is alcohol is such an accepted entity in our society. I mean, if you think of a lot, we all look forward to probably the advertisements around Christmas, and we see it in the media. A lot of the advertising and even our music portrays it as a very normal thing in our society. And so we have gotten used to it. And that sometimes getting used to something sometimes makes it a little bit dangerous.
Do you by chance know, like statistically, like how many Americans drink? Is it pervasive? Is it everybody? Is it a certain amount? And then I guess counter that, has that changed in the last couple of years with all the stressors and us sort of being kept at home? And did alcohol consumption shift a bit in the last 2 years?
Well, you know, there's a number of organizations that try to keep their finger on the pulse of how much people drink. And our latest survey, which is interesting, came out in 2020. So our statistics are going to always be a little bit behind.
Got it.
Because we have to process it. But it's estimated that we're looking at about almost 139 million people that actually drank alcohol in the past month. And that's over 50, really over about 50% of the population.
Right.
And so that sometimes doesn't surprise people because I think people are used to people drinking alcohol, especially around the holidays.
Sure.
It's a very, you know, integral part of people's celebration and things like that. And but what we are starting to do is to start breaking it down and saying, okay, these people that are drinking, yes, they've drinking, but what are the consequences of it? So one of the things that we find, though, in looking at those statistics is the concerning thing is 50% roughly of the people drank that we're looking at people that are 12 or older. So we're not.
Oh, wow.
We're looking at some young people.
Oh, okay.
But what we're looking at is that of those 50% that drank or that 130, roughly 139 million people, one of the things that we're seeing is about 40 something percent, 44, 45% of those individuals actually were classified as binge drinkers. And we'll talk a little bit about binge drinking, but binge drinking is a big concern. College campuses, University of Georgia, Athens, many other college campuses, binge drinking is a very big concern with regard to us. And the also of those 40 something percent people that are binge drinking, approximately 29% of them actually we classify as heavy drinkers. So when we're talking about binge drinking, a lot of people think, okay, somebody just went out and got drunk, and that, and people say, yeah, that's sowing their wild oats and stuff like that. But binge drinking is a little bit more than that. And then of course, the other issue is we always have, you know, when you talk to people about drinking, how do they classify themselves as, you know, whether they are
sure
a light drinker, social drinker, whatever. But another important thing that you brought up was how did the pandemic change it? And so we're just now getting statistics. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting is, you know, the alcohol distributors and were classified as essential personnel during the pandemic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was still available.
Sure.
And some people thought, well, the drinking went down because people weren't going out, especially in the first 18 months, weren't not going out to bars and stuff like that. But what we actually have seen is alcohol consumption went up. And what we actually saw is that basically with the alcohol consumption, that between 20 and 40% of the people surveyed said they actually increased their drinking. Oh. And then as you and I were talking about previously, one of the funny statistics was that while people were at home, they noticed that people that were at home during the pandemic that had children between the ages of 5 and 7, they actually had a higher increase in drinking. That seemed to be the more susceptible population.
God bless them, because you know they were stuck at home with those 5 to 7 year olds. I'm surprised you didn't say teenagers as well, the parents of teenagers.
That sort of surprised me too, that it was this age. I know that 5 to 7 can be a trying age, but I was surprised that that population wasn't the teenagers.
It's funny you bring this up, because I think, you know, you hit it around the head in those 18 months or so, people would go to a bar and they would have dinner, and then, you know, they had to get home. So maybe they had just a cocktail with dinner or a glass of wine, knowing they were driving somewhere or they had responsibilities or they were in public. Take that now and say, I'm not going to a restaurant. I'm sitting at home. I'm with my spouse, partner, significant other, friends, heck, by themselves. Now they have nowhere to be. They can pretty much drink because it's, I won't say it's free, but let's say it's cheaper than buying the drinks at the bar. They don't really have anybody looking over their shoulder legally, and also if they kind of get messy. So all those things changed a bit. So I'm not surprised that people drank more, because you could take it behind closed doors. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to call it hiding it, but let's just say there was no one there to keep you honest. You mentioned binge drinking, light drinking, moderate drinking, heavy drinking. I guess the question is, whether I'm sitting at home or I'm at a bar or a restaurant, are those definitions the same no matter what? I'm assuming they are.
You're absolutely right. When we're talking about binge drinking, literally what we're looking at is that someone would drink amount of alcohol that would get their blood alcohol above a 0.08. Most people know that the legal limit for drinking is 0.08. And I'd like to make this statement here before I go further, is I think, you know, the listeners need to be aware that you can be charged for drunk driving and public intoxication at below a 0.08. So if you're 0.08, you're pretty much going to get charged, but you can, that's another consequence. But when we look at, you know, individuals with binge drinking, we're looking at, with males, typically you're looking at consuming 5 or more drinks
in one sitting, right? That's the term binge. Like I'm sitting still for one, let's call it 7 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Correct.
I'm a guy. How much would I have to drink to be defined as I'm binge drinking on that night?
So typically what you're looking at is really in a 2 hour period is typically you're drinking 5 drinks. And if you're a girl, you're looking at 4 drinks. But that brings up a very important thing, because how do we define a drink?
Okay.
So, you know, if I'm going out to a bar, restaurant, or whatever, my definition of drinks is I order a glass of wine, that's considered a drink. I order a cocktail, that to me is considered a drink. Same. But when we look at it, it depends on how much alcohol is actually present. And so, for example, I go order, and let's say I have a beer, 12 ounce typical beer is going to have about 5% of alcohol. That's considered about one drink. But, you know, what's very popular right now, craft beers. Those craft beers, you know, a 12 ounce.
Way more, right?
Exactly. Or if I get a, you know, a tall boy, you know, or, you know, one of the Australian beers, which they, you know, often promote, that is actually more alcohol. If I get a glass of wine, my server brings me a glass. Typically, a drink, a glass of wine is going to be roughly about 5 ounces. But we've probably all been at places where that, depending on the wine glass, you know, they don't weigh, the bartender doesn't measure out 5 ounces. They pretty much will, you know, pour you a glass that's 3/4, you know, or so. So you may actually get more. And then with cocktails, a lot of people think if I go out, they're going to under pour. But I mean, I've literally had individuals that have had a cocktail such as a Sea Breeze or something like that, that's been equivalent to 3 drinks. But to them, that's been 1 drink.
So it's not just the number, it's how much alcohol you put in there. So
correct.
Just so our, so people who are listening or watching, how do we know? I'm like, how do we, I guess I'm thinking, golly, I've become a mad scientist at home trying to figure out how much to put the ingredient in to stay below a certain realm. I don't, to me, when I have a drink, it's to relax for the evening or to enjoy myself with friends. I don't think about, you know, dosing myself with alcohol. So what should people be looking for? How should they drink healthier? I don't even know if that's a way to say that.
Maybe smarter, drink smarter.
Okay, smarter. All right, I'll go with that.
The issue is typically these drinks are based upon roughly about a little more than a half an ounce of pure alcohol.
Okay.
And so, and actually there's been studies that have demonstrated with people thinking they drank this amount and they've measured their blood alcohol. And for example, with a 12 ounce regular beer, people were pretty much right on, fairly close, I'd say within a drink of what they thought they drank, probably less than that. When we start, and with straight shots, they were almost right on because, okay, I mean, you're measuring out, sure, you know, a shot. Where we saw the big difference, surprisingly, was wine, because again, depending on the wine glass, and nobody really measures out 4 to 5 ounces. But you have seen, because of some legal issues, you have seen, for example, certain restaurants have put their logo on their wine glasses, which gives the bartender where to pour on that logo.
Measure. Yeah, exactly. We did that. I used to bartend when I was getting through school. So yes, I did exactly that. I eyeballed where it should cut off,
right,
as a glass of wine. Yeah.
And then the other one is the, you know, with regard to mixed drinks, and that, you know, most people, if they're mixing their own drink, they're not going to get necessarily a shot glass out and measure it. They sort of pour in that looks like it. So the point becomes is, you know, what we typically try to tell people is generally this, as far as smart drinking is, for the students, we typically state if you're going to drink on a daily basis, you should never have more than 2 drinks. So that would be like 2 12-ounce beers.
Okay.
Or maybe 2 glasses of wines with at least an hour between the drink.
Okay. And what if it's liquor? Would it be like just a shot glass in each of the mixed cocktails or whatever, separated, correct, by an hour? Okay.
Correct.
Got it.
If you are, I think I said, if you don't drink daily, it's no more. Yeah. If you drink daily, no more than 2.
Got it.
If you're not drinking daily, some people say don't drink more than 3. So they usually call this the 3-2-1. Sort of rule.
Okay.
So it's really the issue becomes that it's limiting, but also we all also know that a lot of people get used to what they're drinking. So they know, for example, if I go out to get a craft beer, I know that it's going to be a little bit higher without even looking at the alcohol. I know that it's going to be higher than what I would see in a regular beer.
Sure.
So I know to probably not drink more than 1. And of course, the other thing we always tell people is be very careful when you go to certain bar drinks. There was one bar close by, not here in Athens, but not too far from here, that was pushing what they call the paramedic, that had equivalent to almost 9 drinks in it.
Holy cow.
So, you know, bars have been put under a lot more scrutiny.
Sure.
From a standpoint because of the legal aspects of it. So bars have gotten a little bit more cognizant of what they're serving and how often they're serving.
Which makes perfect sense. I think when I was doing this as a bartender, we were held to a certain standard about how much we pour and who we pour for and how often we poured somebody. I think the other question that Randy, that hits me, you talked a bit about binge, you talked a bit about daily drinkers versus non-daily, but what about, I always hear this, I'm a heavy drinker, a moderate drinker, light drinker. Are there definitions that go along with those classifications?
There are, and a lot of people don't aware of it. And we've added another one, high intensity drinker.
Oh, wow. Okay. That just scares me. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But when we look at the, if you look at what a physician would consider, literally they're talking about a light drinker having about a drink per day. They actually have it like 1.2 drinks. A moderate drinker is about two, and then three or more is usually considered a heavy drinker. And when we see these individuals that are what we call high intensity drinkers, they are drinking, for example, 2 to 3 times the binge drinking. Think about that. So if I'm a male, I'm drinking 10 drinks per day.
Okay.
And I have literally, since I've been here and been doing work with alcohol and drugs and things like that, the highest person that I've dealt with, I had, I knew of a student that was drinking 23 beers a day. And that was what he was, that was his standard. And of course, that was very expensive and put him at a very high risk.
I think that, as we talk about this, I think the other thing to sort of discuss though is, there was a study out, maybe a decade ago that said a few alcohols every day, a few drinks here or there, it's perfectly healthy. Actually, it's recommended. It's healthy for you. So, we've talked a bit about heavy, moderate, high intensity, low. I think we would all agree that if you're in the heavy to high intensity area, you might be thinking of having an issue of misuse of alcohol. Let's just call it what it is.
Right.
And so, for those listening, if you find that category, we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. If you're in that moderate to light category, I still think you have to be cognizant of what's out there because things have changed. The clinical trials and what we're seeing now doesn't back up those original claims that a drink a day or two drinks a day, depending on what sex you are, makes you live longer or makes you healthier. Am I interpreting the literature correctly?
Yes. I mean, the thing is that, when this first came out, specifically, people were saying if you have a glass of wine per day, that's healthy. And I do know that some people said, well, it helps me relax. And then they also took the information that alcohol causes your blood vessels to dilate, which would lower your blood pressure and maybe improve your cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting because the American Heart Association, their recommendation is that there are some data that suggest, and again, some of this data we have to be careful with because the media gets hold with it, just like what we've seen with COVID. And they take a little bit of a fact and they really expound upon it. And so they
apply to everybody. Like that one fact doesn't apply to everybody listening to this podcast. Yeah.
Exactly. Somebody that has liver disease, kidney disease, somebody that has alcoholism in their family would be a big concern. So what the American Heart Association, their recommendations are, no more than about a drink per day. And again, when we say drink, we're looking at standard drink. And, but their bottom line says that if you're not drinking, then don't start drinking for the health benefits. So, but there is some data that with some drink, with people that have been drinking, that a drink roughly no more than a drink per day could, potentially, decrease their risk of recurrent heart attacks or.
And that's men and women, right? So they grouped it together.
Right.
Okay.
And stroke.
So a drink per day, like a 12-ounce beer, a traditional glass of wine, 4 ounces.
Right.
Or a shot of some liquor in a mixer, a cocktail, highball, whatever you're using. That's considered one drink per day or those right. levels. Okay. Making sure I understand. And then I think the other thing to talk about, and you brought this up really beautifully, that those numbers I just gave you don't apply to everybody. They're like a universal, but if you're somebody with a family history of alcohol misuse, or let's say you're somebody that's going through liver cancer or something else, your numbers may be different than someone that doesn't have those things in their history or their medical history, right?
Exactly. And not only that, but you have to also consider We know that there are certain things that put us at a higher risk for impairment. Even drinking a certain amount of alcohol, even if we stay within that. So if we're taking other drugs that may interact with that.
That's a good point.
Sometimes the drugs may not directly interact, but they may affect our liver, which may decrease our ability to break down the alcohol. And that can be, and then you and I had a brief discussion too, certain conditions, like, for example, when we were talking about this earlier, for example, people with GI bypass or the banding, is that can change potentially how your body reacts to the alcohol.
That's good. So if you've had gastric bypass, banding, or any kind of anti-obesity surgeries, that changes the way you do things. And you said, as a pharmacist, it really hits home then that if I'm going in to talk with someone that's taking care of me, whether it's a pharmacist as my provider, a physician, a nurse practitioner, PA, and they want to write a prescription for me or write a new drug, I need to be honest then about my use of alcohol. And I don't think that's true. I don't think I necessarily walk in and wear a big sign that says, I have a drink per night above my head. Do you find that many people are transparent about how much they drink?
Here's what they believe is transparent. I've seen this on numerous medical records. So I say, Tim, you know, what you're drinking, your response is going to be, I drink socially. What does socially mean? Socially could be when my frat party or when my office party is having a Christmas party. Maybe I don't drink any other time during the year, but during that period, I may binge drink, which is, you know, or they may have periods like I don't drink during the week because I work, but I drink heavy on the weekend. I hear this a lot.
I do too.
So then what happens is they're going, let's say I drink 10 drinks on the weekend, maybe on a Saturday. And they say, well, you say you drink socially, how many drinks per week? So what I tell you is, well, I drink about one per day. That's a big difference than sitting down and drinking 10. And so, you know, one of the things that we see is the common things, and you see these in ads, drink responsibly, drink in moderation. How do you define that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you how I've had people define it to me. What is responsibly? I drink that I don't get a DUI. That just may mean I didn't get caught.
Okay? Right.
Drinking responsibly, sometimes people with alcohol use disorder, they put rules on it so that they are. So I don't drink before 5 o'clock. That's responsible to me. So the transparency issue is you need to let the doctor know, literally, you know, I might go in and I might say, you know, I have a couple of glasses of wine per week. A follow-up question would be, is this, how many per day or how often do you drink per day? But people are reluctant sometimes to even ask that question, even health professionals, because one of the things that I do see is sometimes you or I have a family member that's drinking.
Right.
The idea is that we may be reluctant to ask the question. If I don't know, it ain't happening.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because I just recently in October went for my annual, you know, get together with my primary care physician. And one of the questions was, do you smoke? Do you wear your seatbelt? Do you have a firearm in your house? You know, what are your practices when it comes to, are you monogamous? Are you dating? One of those things. And the other question came out was alcohol. And I have to admit, I had to stop and think about it for a second. The others were pretty, I just sort of had those answers. They were easy. When I got to alcohol, I was like, okay, how much do I have? Not because I necessarily was worried as, did I have 4 drinks last week or 2 drinks last week? I don't know. I think your point about that is that the people who are taking care of you can't help you unless you give them all the information that's relevant to your health care. And it may be an answer we don't want to hear, right? I mean, my physician may look at me and go, Tim, you had 7 drinks last week. You really need to cut that down to 4 or 2 or whatever the recommendation that that person gives me. I think one of the things that in our society we do, and I know you've seen this too, and I have to admit here, Randy, maybe this is not professional, but I'm a huge TikTok fan. I have learned more from TikTok than I think I learned my entire college career. But I hear people telling their stories about drunk Amazon shopping, getting together and doing kind of, you know, stupid things when they've been drinking with friends over the holidays. And you see all the TikToks with people having a grand time. We do romanticize and kind of use alcohol as a social lubricant, as well as a way to blow off stress. But what, I mean, what if I told you I drink 7 drinks a week or 10 drinks a week? What is that doing to my body overall? I mean, we talked about the good, but I'm a pragmatist. I also know that there's got to be some bad in there somewhere.
Well, it's like I tell my students all the time, is there is not anything that you take in that's not going to be toxic. And actually, in a law case one time, somebody said, asked me that, and I responded with, that's true. And they said, what about water? And I said, well, have you ever heard of drowning? That's an overdose of water. Or better yet, as many people may still remember, a few, it's not too often, too long ago in the past, a radio station had that contest, who could drink the most water, and the woman died of water toxicity, drinking so much water. So the point becomes, with regard to, is that we know that everything has a potential health problem. Our biggest concerns, if I were to, you know, ask most people, what's the problem with drinking? Their number one thing would be, you're going to get cirrhosis, or you're going to get liver failure.
And so go ahead, because, you know, if my dad's listening to this, he's going to say, well, he calls me short. He's going to say, short, I don't know what that cirrhosis thing is. What does that mean?
So cirrhosis is a disease where and not only alcohol can cause it, there's other things, hepatitis and so forth can cause it, where that the liver literally becomes nothing more than scar tissue. The liver just gets destroyed.
So the alcohol damages or bruises or eats up the liver and causes it to be damaged. Oh, okay. And that comes with like prolonged use or a lot of use of alcohol?
Yes. And so you have, you know, the two things that I hear when I talk about alcohol, that they will say, if I say, what are the consequences of alcohol? They're going to say liver damage or liver failure or cirrhosis. The other thing they're going to say, drunk driving, you know, getting into an accident.
Those are probably two of the most common things people think about. That I agree with you. Okay.
Right. But what we also see is that we see that for every year of excessive drinking, is that it takes a pretty significant decrease on our lifespan. And it can affect, for example, it can affect your heart. We have a disease called alcoholic cardiomyopathy, which means the alcohol actually damages the heart muscle. That is specific. We have, our liver. A lot of people drinking heavily develop peptic ulcer, a gastritis, the lining of the stomach gets inflamed and can actually erode. It attacks the brain. So we can develop dementia. We can develop, specifically, the alcohol will cause significant deterioration. One of the things we see with heavy drinkers is what is called blackouts. And blackouts are not periods where that you're passing out. Blackouts are periods where your memory is erased.
Oh, wow.
So those blackouts, what people don't think about is, I've known people that are chronic alcoholics that their blackouts have been, we're talking about weeks. They do not remember. They're up and moving around, but they don't remember what's happened.
Sure. So to go back, if someone has a history of high blood pressure, or they've had a heart attack, or they've had a stroke, or they have a bit of forgetfulness, really, their alcohol consumption should be looked at by whomever's caring for them to talk about the fact that it needs to be down to a certain level or non-existent. That's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow.
And that is important, because the other thing you have to look at, because I deal with this a lot of times, especially with the older population.
Sure.
So the problem is, well, I don't drink. I drink wine. So the aspect of, and I do see sometimes people will go, well, I don't have an alcohol problem because I only drink wine or only have a beer occasionally.
I've heard that too.
Hard liquor.
Yeah, hard liquor.
But a lot of people consider wine as healthy. And so, I literally had a gentleman that was drinking 4 bottles of wine a night. And his doctor said, your liver is having some problems. And the gentleman asked me, he said, I don't understand it. He said, I don't drink. And he said, the doctor is saying the alcohol is affecting it. And after talking to him, I found out that his concept was, no, he doesn't drink heavy liquor. but he drinks wine, and to him, wine was healthy. And in the Southeast, one of the things we see is it's in the Bible. So, you know, so right. people sometimes think that wine doesn't have its bad aspects.
I think, so for me, what I'm hearing is, you know, number one, drink in moderation by the definition you gave us earlier about how we should be drinking. It's two drinks a night separated by an hour for everybody. And I want to throw in here, one of the things that I don't do enough and I should, is I should talk to folks that are transgender as well, because we're using all this male and female jargon about, you know, if you're a female or you're this. When you're dealing with folks that were born a male, for example, but live life as a female, they are a female, that's who they are, that's who they identify as, which rule do they have to follow? I mean, to me, that will be confusing as heck.
So if we look at things that can change your level of impairment, so let's say that you normally drink two beers,
okay,
and it gives you a blood alcohol of, say, 0.04, 0.05.
Okay.
There are things that you may do that can, even though your blood alcohol doesn't change, the impairment is greater. So it's going to have a greater effect on you. Okay. So specifically in males versus females, one of the big issues physiologically that we deal with is alcohol distributes in the water component of your body. And what we see is females have less water, which means
people that were born female have more water. Okay, got it.
Have less water.
I'm sorry, have less water. Okay, got it. Right.
So which means the alcohol distributes in the tissues is going to distribute, it's not going to have enough to distribute in that water. That is one of the reasons why women tend to get impaired at a lower level and for longer, is because of that physiological difference. Now, with your case where that if someone transitions,
okay,
and during that transition phase, I don't think we have any data that would say specifically.
I can't find anything, because I'm trying to take care and talk about this with my medical students, and it's difficult to find good data. But for those that are transgender, I don't want them to feel left out in this discussion.
Right. But those that have transitioned, we may be more like the female, especially with hormonals and maybe surgeries, where that the body water may be changed. My rule, I would say, with these individuals that are in this various stage is, when we're looking at this, I would err on the side of drinking less. So if I was supposedly, say, I could drink two drinks per day, I would be looking at drinking one. If anything, I think the safer component is going to be the one drink per day, or the lower drink on the female side, would be the safest component to go with. Realizing that even one drink, there is no completely safe level of alcohol consumption.
I think you just hit the nail on the head right there. I think a lot of people go, well, I drink in moderation, because that's what you hear people say. And I'm having a hard time with that, because I don't know what moderation is. So what you just said is there is no safe level of alcohol that I need to sort of watch and minimize my use to the bare minimum, or don't use at all. That's not going to go well with our audience, right? Because everybody wants to have a drink every now and then. But I think your point is drink smart. Yes. Know your limits, know what's there, know your history. Holy cow, the people that we've brought up. As we come to the conclusion of this, I always ask our guests to sort of sum up in three pearls what we've talked about. And we've covered a lot. So are there three tips that you can leave our audience with, sort of to make them think about their alcohol and how they're using it and how it relates to their health? Not to necessarily preach, but just make people, more aware of how to be smart about this?
I think our last point is a good one, is first of all, realize that there is always a risk with any alcohol consumption. So I think people have to recognize, just like with taking any drug, there's always going to be a potential.
And alcohol is a drug. So that's a really great analogy. Okay.
The second thing I would say is to be aware, not only realizing that there's a risk, but be honest with yourself with regard to how much you drink. Don't base it on how you feel. Don't base it upon what other people perceive as your level. Don't try to drink, but be honest with yourself of, I think, how much you actually are drinking. Which sometimes is hard because it means looking at maybe instead of a full glass of wine, I maybe need to, you know, it's very easy to measure out 4 ounces and get an idea of what's going to be in a wine glass that you have.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing too, is it's very important that if you do choose to drink, I think that any healthcare decision that's being made or that you're involved with, your PCP and so forth, they need to know an honest assessment. They don't need to know that you drink socially. They don't need to know if it's moderate or whatever. I've had people come in and say, you know, I'm a heavy drinker. But I think what you have to do is you have to look at someone and say, you know, when my doctor asks me, I need to say, okay, I have a beer once a week. If I'm having 10 beers in the night, he needs to know. And I think that not only do we have to be honest with ourselves with what are we really drinking, and also not only what are we drinking, but why are we drinking?
That's a good point. That's a great point.
You know, if I'm drinking to fit in, if I'm drinking to do away with stress and things like that, then should I really be drinking? Because I'm going to try to use the alcohol to dose to when that goes away, which means I'm going to drink too much.
And if I may add to that, your point about why one drinks, if it truly is stress, or you're having pain, or you're having mental health, you know, crises where you're just, I can't seem to get my act together, that might be taken care of in a different route. If you're honest with your healthcare professional, they may find a way to help you with all those problems so you don't have to rely on the alcohol. Those are really great pearls. And number two sticks with me because it's what I've been doing since the first of the year. How much alcohol do I use? And has that changed since the pandemic? And now that we're, excuse this term, reemerging and going back out, do I need to look at my pre-pandemic versus post, and how do I handle that? And I'm sure that's a question many people have. I won't call it a resolution. I just call it kind of insightful thoughts about my lifestyle and what I'm doing. And that's what prompted this today, Dr. Tackett, is talking with my friends over New Year's. The theme I heard from almost everyone was that their drinking had increased, and it had increased because of a lot of things going on in their environment. And many of them are now looking at, how do I go back to, and I'm excuse this term, normal. How do I go back to pre-pandemic? And so I think you've given us a lot of insight today about what is too much, even what a definition of moderation looks like. But I think the other thing is, if people feel like they need help or they need to talk about this, they need to seek out their primary care provider and work on that and be honest with them so it doesn't exceed and go any further. That's a really great point that you made about being honest with healthcare.
And I think the other thing along that line, just to emphasize, is that many people, they are afraid of being judged by their healthcare provider as well as their friends and families.
Sure.
One of the things that has changed about addressing treatment with people that are potentially having a problem or that have a problem is a big concern is they feel shameful or embarrassed. And one of the things is that most of our treatment modalities today are looking at this as a disease process or as a, not a weakness in character, not, sure. Not that someone is morally corrupt or, you know, has loose morals or is, you know, years ago, it was like, you don't have an alcohol problem, just, you know, suck it up and deal with it. And I think that we have, I think a lot of people that go to treatment, one of the things, and even having discussions when maybe they don't need specific treatment, but that early discussion has them reflect upon what you and I have talked about today. Yeah. Is, what am I drinking? How much am I drinking in?
Right.
You know, why am I drinking?
And maybe it's simple counseling. I think your point well taken. We've come a long way from this point of pointing fingers. 139 million, is that what you said? People drink.
Yep.
So for someone to feel as though they're being judged is inappropriate in the healthcare system. And I'm always this big proponent of, if you feel that's the case, find yourself a new provider. I'm never one to mince words about that. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work for me if somebody's not there to help me. Dr. Tackett, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a really great conversation. I think one that's timely for not only the new year, but for everything we've all been through the past couple of years. So I do appreciate it. For For those listening in, thank you so much. I want to remind you, in February, we're going to be talking about heart failure, which sounds like a god-awful topic, but we're going to talk about how to mend that heart. And since February is cardiovascular month, that makes perfect sense with Valentine's Day. But we're also going to talk about how that impacts folks that are Black, how it affects different populations, and how we can work to keep everyone healthy. Until then, I'm Dr. Tim Brown. You've been listening to FarmCast for the Community, sponsored by University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. All I can say to all of you is go in good health, and I wish you all the best. Thanks so much, everyone.